Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, December 9th, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. Everybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker or the audio icon to mute or unmute yourself. And you can click on the raise hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. If people are able to utilize these tools, it will be helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make a comment. And we can have one speaker at a time. I do request everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking because it helps us eliminate any external noise. And that is helpful for everyone who is listening to the meeting now and for anybody who listens to the audio afterwards. We do have two sets of guest speakers today. So I would ask for the presenters to, since you might be using presentations, to please describe your presentations in detail. And that is for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision.
Tab A8 has joined the meeting. Space.
Again, I would request for everyone to please stay on mute. Thank you.
Yes.
We do have public comments section later on in the meeting. I would remind everyone that to ensure that any members of the public who intend to make public comments get an opportunity to do so, we will have a timer set for 2 minutes for each speaker.
Escape. Zoom meeting. Speech on demand.
All right. I am going to mute everyone, so please do bear with me for a quick moment. Thank you. Chair Calabia, if you would unmute yourself and let me know, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Okay, I'm back.
Sounds good. So before I start reading the agenda, I will share my screen. So if you would bear with me for a quick moment. And when my screen is visible, if somebody can confirm it for me, that I would appreciate that.
I can see it.
Okay, thank you. So after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. And afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval for today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have a presentation about winter 2024 shutdown. We will have Teresa Thomas. She is the supervisor for Wayside Work Planning. Bobby Gilchrist, he is program manager for bus operations, along with Erica Cunningham. She is the vice president of community relations and outreach. Vice Chair Steve Caffin will discuss briefly DC bus islands at 4:45. 4:55, we will have a team from District Department of Transportation to discuss accessibility and bus priorities. They'll give us an update about that. In the team, we have Megan Kanagi, Zach Gambetti, James Carrington, David Van Dusen, and Kevin Harrison. Megan, if I have missed anyone, please do include those names when you begin your presentation. Thank you. At 5:25, we will have a committee discussion to talk about Prince George's County updates and next steps. At 5:45, we will go to public comment section and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I will stop sharing my screen now. And beginning with the AAC roster, when I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster.
I'm here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush. Tina Palladia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Vanessa is on the meeting with us. Rico Dancy has informed that he will not be able to attend another couple of meetings, but he
audio now unmuted.
Joining from next month onwards.
I'm present.
Yeah, I'm at WMATA and getting ready to go over to Amtrak, hopefully.
All space.
Okay, so I guess we have some. The next person is. Oops. Bear with me. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Kaffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Thomas had informed that he will be out for a couple of meetings this month. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Sarah Rod. Doris Ray.
Here.
Thank you. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush actually is going to be out for the rest of the month. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay. That concludes the roster for today's meeting. Chair Kalabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, but just to back up, how many members are on at the moment?
I can tell you in just a quick second.
Sure. Oh, good. Yes, and now we are going to deal with the agenda. All on the screen have seen the agenda. Are there any objections to the agenda? If not, it's approved. The next item is approval of the minutes of our last BRS meeting. And I outlined what we discussed in November at our earlier AAC meeting. I hope that's sufficient because at the moment I can't retrieve anything on my Mac desktop. And so I don't have access to past records. But if you remember what we heard last meeting about our BRS meeting in November, does anyone make a motion that we approve the agenda?
Move you.
Okay.
I think you got three people that are saying yes.
Okay. Seconds.
Yes.
Second. No objections. Hearing no objections, the November minutes are approved. Let's move forward to today's agenda. Anu, do you want to introduce? I'm not sure exactly who is.
So the first topic is the winter shutdown, winter 2024 shutdown. And I'm trying to go through our participant list. The invited team is Teresa Thomas, Bobby Gilchrist, and Erica Cunningham. So if any one of you are on the call, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
And identify.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Theresa Thomas from WMATA, Wayside Work Planning, for the project management of the winter outage.
Okay, welcome. And is anyone else joining you from the team? If not,
I would hope so.
well,
Theresa, if you'd like to go ahead and start, please do.
Yes.
Would you be able to share, because I'm actually mobile?
Sure, yes, if you give me once.
All right, thank you.
This would be, you're most welcome. This would be the presentation that was provided from Erica.
Yes, and I see Bobby is on the line.
Okay,
cool. As well, so.
All right, so I'm
and
going
if,
to.
And if Erica's not here, then I'll speak on her part as best as I can.
Sounds good. I'm going to share this presentation, and if you would just bear with me for a quick moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody can confirm about my screen being visible, I would appreciate that.
I see it now.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. All right. In just a matter of 10 days, our 2024 winter outage will begin. This will impact the blue, orange, and silver line of our metro system. Mostly, it will impact our core area, which is the downtown region. During this time frame, there are multiple items that will be addressed that are maintenance related as well as upgrades. Speaking to roadway concerns such as our rail, our curve maintenance, our ground pads, our structural impact of the infrastructure when it speaks to our roadway. We also will have an upgrade to the platform light edge, which are the lights that blink right there as the train is approaching. They are all getting upgraded to LED lights, which I'm excited about so I can see when a train is coming. New signage configuration for customer experience, as well as artwork installation has now been added on as of last week. We also have components that speak to how well the train travels throughout our system. Those will all be upgraded, which are our switch machines, so glad about that. And then we are doing a full interior station detail cleaning at all of the impacted stations. New, can I get the next slide? Okay. All right. So this outage is going to be in two phases. The first phase is December 20th through the 26th, which Foggy Bottom to Federal Triangle will be impacted. Foggy Bottom and Federal Triangle will be our terminal stations, which means that is going to be the last station that anyone can utilize the rail system. And then we'll have to depart and utilize our free shuttle system that we will have right outside of the station. They will be marked, lined up. There will be ambassadors, anyone who needs assistance. We have all of those personnel that will be available. Trains will service both platforms at Foggy Bottom. And then at Federal Triangle during the 20th through the 26th, only one side of the platform will be accessible because our work groups are going to be conducting work on the opposite side. So just for notation, that would be McPherson, what is that? That would be McPherson Square, Metro Center, and Farragut West. That will all be closed. Metro Center, though, it is only going to be the lower level. So the upper level to Metro Center will still be accessible. Rail will still run on that level. Next slide, please. All right, phase two. Phase two of this outage is an extension. It is from December 27th through the 30th. So Foggy Bottom will still act in capacity as a terminal station. But we are going to extend all the way to Federal Center Southwest during that time frame. That will leave trains will only be able to will only be available from Foggy Bottom going outbound and Federal Center Southwest going outbound. The impacted stations will then also now include not only Farragut West and McPherson Square and Metro Center, lower level only, but also Federal Triangle, Smithsonian, and lower level of Lafont Plaza. Please keep in mind for the lower level areas at Lafont Plaza and also Metro Center, we will have it barricaded off, utilizing fencing and crowd control. And that's not just for the safety of our work groups, but also for the safety of our customers. And then normal service will be restored on December 31st, right in time for New Year's. And I think buses, customers, okay, I'll take that for Eric. Now, let's, Erica, did she jump on?
Let me check. I'm not seeing Erica, unless, did you want to go ahead and
I'll take it for customer experience. It's fine. All right. So our customer experience and engagement team has been working diligently to ensure that every aspect of this outage, our customers are made aware, as far as when it comes to directional flow, wayfind signage. Also, if you have any questions, especially transferring from the train to the bus and then taking the bus or the shuttle to another station and, you know, being able to complete your travels, we are definitely taking care of that. So the tactics that have already gone out for stakeholder direct contact via email and calls, that was taken care of in September. Press releases have already gone out. Our Metro message has already been done. The social media campaign and web launch took place last month. For anyone who has any further questions or wants to read further into our project, we have it available at WMATA.com/major construction. Paid advertising began earlier this month, and notification signage will begin today. We have had a lot of conversations in regards to signage, making sure that at bus posts, on pylons, at the station, the A-frames, in multiple languages, everything as far as visibility of seeing it up high, up low, even decal signage on the floor and ground level has all been established to make sure that no one will get lost in this 10-day outage. Also, we have our customer outreach begins December 11th. Brochures are going to be distributed. Anyone who is traveling in this area during this time frame, we're going to have ambassadors, we're going to have supervisors, we're going to have WMATA personnel. Everyone is coming out during this holiday season and this outage in full force to make sure that we get you where you need to get to. I believe she has an additional slide.
Yes.
This is what it is going to mimic. This is going to mimic our summer shutdown that we wrapped up in the end of August of this year. So you all will be able to see all of these lovely people, the signs, getting everyone where they need to be. The only difference is that the weather will look different based off of what's seen in these images, and people will have coats on. But other than that, we're going to mimic the same communication for our customers as visualized here. And then, does she have another one anew?
That's the end of her slides, yes.
Okay, and I guess bus. Okay. On to you, Bobby.
All right, I'm going to stop sharing for a quick moment and I'll share your, Bobby, did you want me to share or would you like to share the screen?
If you would, Anu, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. He's taking a extra time. Okay, if somebody can confirm if my screen is visible, I would appreciate that.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Go ahead, Bobby.
And good afternoon, everyone. Bobby Gilchrist, Program Manager, Bus Operations Service Quality. My main role here is to provide shuttle transportation between the stations that Teresa mentioned. Excuse me. These are the items that have been completed over the last month and a half. The main one is up next, which is the training for the contract, and the support staff will start doing that this week and toward December the 19th as we start the project. Next slide. Excuse me. As Teresa spoke, she gave the terminal, which is Foggy Bottom. And as you see, it goes from Foggy Bottom to Federal Center for phase one, and then starts back up at December the 27th, it goes to phase two. But this is the portion from December 20th to December 26th from Foggy Bottom to Federal Triangle. The service that we will provide, this is the shuttle service. During the first phase, which is December 20th through the 26th, we will operate a local that will service Foggy Bottom, Bergen West, McPherson Square, Metro Center, Federal Center. And we will operate three express routes to accommodate the passengers. Express one is from Foggy to Federal Triangle, Express two from Foggy Bottom to Gallery Place, and Express three, note this is a weekday/rush hour service only. Express 3 is a weekday/rush hour service only. But these are the four services that we'll provide from December the 20th to December 26th. Next slide. Excuse me. This is the weekend and weekday holiday service that we will provide December 21st, 22nd, and Christmas Day. We will operate one local and two express services. Note the Express 3 does not run on the weekday. It is eliminated on the weekend. So during the weekend and the holiday, we'll operate one local and two express routes. Next slide. This slide here goes into phase two, and it shows the extension with the Smithsonian and Lafont Plaza being open stations, excuse me, closed stations, and the terminal being Federal Center. During this phase, we will operate again one local and three express routes to accommodate the passengers from Foggy Bottom to Federal Center Southwest. These are those four routes. As you can see, it extended it from Foggy Bottom. Instead of Federal Triangle, it extended it to Federal Center Southwest, along with the three expresses from Foggy to Federal Center Southwest, Foggy to Gallery, Foggy to Farragut North. Express 3, again, operates only on the weekday/rush hour only. During the weekend, from the 27th to the 30th, excuse me, we'll operate the local service and two expresses. Note again that the Express 3 is not here. We do not run that on the weekend. That is a weekday/rush hour service. During the weekend service, we'll operate a local and Express 1 and 2 from December the 27th to December the 30th. Before we go into this, I would like to also add at each affected station, there will be a wheelchair accessible vehicle at all stations that are affected. That van or that vehicle is there to accommodate anyone using a mobility device or someone who doesn't want the bus. So that individual actually has two choices. They can get on a bus or they can request the wheelchair accessible van. I'll stop right here for any questions before we go into these slides. Anybody have any questions regarding the service that we're providing, phase one, phase two, or the wheelchair accessible vans located at each affected station?
Bobby, this is Tino.
Yes.
Did you mention that besides wheelchair users, others, and maybe people who are not, do not have a disability, can use the Metro Access vans?
Absolutely, absolutely. You do not have to be a user of a wheelchair. Anyone can request a van for 100 different reasons, but you do not have to be a wheelchair user.
And such vans usually go to a designated place, a place designated by the, say, wheelchair user or other person with disability. But how about people who do not have disabilities and are eligible to take the van if they so choose? How will the driver figure out where to go?
Well, the van driver is trained on the entire route from Foggy Bottom to all the stations between Foggy Bottom and Federal Center. We are lenient with this service. It's generally based upon request, regardless of any challenge the individual has. If someone requests it, 9 times out of 10, we will accommodate.
Teresa mentioned that this ends just as New Year arrives. And you mentioned that, acknowledged that Christmas, December 25th, is a busy day for transit. Hanukkah begins on the 25th this year also. I don't remember when it will end, but in any event, you expect that anyone coming in from town to celebrate with family or friends, either Christmas or Hanukkah or any other kind of celebration at that time, they will not necessarily know in advance about the arrangements that are made. They may not have access to the prior brochures or announcements online. What happens when a perfect stranger who was just a visitor for that time period shows up? How will they be helped?
Well, we have multiple staff on the ground. You'll have the transit field supervisor, who is an expert in bus operations. You will have the transit management system staff, who are expert in customer service. You will have the outreach staff, who will communicate to our non-English speaking customers. You will have MIPS, Metro information persons, who can give you a range of information concerning the system itself. So there's plenty staff with a unique responsibility that will be out there to assist anyone who's not familiar with the system.
My last quick point is, will they be equipped with whiteboards for people who are deaf or hard of hearing?
Yes, everybody has a little notebook to be able to communicate in writing.
Excellent.
Sure.
Other questions, Anu, whose hands are up?
Yes. So Doris Ray has her hand up. Doris, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. The chairman touched on one of my questions, which is beyond the light whiteboards, but especially even with regard to the whiteboards, I'm wondering what provisions you're going to have beyond that for people who are deaf and hard of hearing or deafblind coming through the stations, because it is during a time period when there are a lot of people in town, both for the Christmas holidays and other religious holidays, as well as for the new year, and but I'm also wondering and concerned about the choice of this time frame to be doing that, to be doing the work you're doing, because it is a very active time for people celebrating the holidays. I know that there are lots of concerts and theater shows, and the hotels are having all kinds of business going on, and it's right in the heart of, you know, downtown Washington, and the station that serves Kennedy Center is there, which has a lot going on, particularly, you know, in that time frame, a lot of concerts and stuff. So there's going to be, I'm wondering if, what are the alternatives or what provisions do you have to help people navigate through to the Kennedy Center shuttles as well as buses they're trying to get to, and not maybe, you know, because people could be using the 30 buses to get through that corridor and such if there's somebody there to help them to navigate and also to communicate with them what's going on. I'm really, really concerned about people coming in town or deaf and hard of hearing.
Sure, understood. I would answer that by saying there's a lot of the decision to do this work this time of year is a strategic decision. The records show historically this is the time of year ridership is at its lowest. So the goal here, or one of the goals, is to impact the public the least that we can. So the ridership is low, and in addition of historically low ridership during this time of year, we have favorable traffic conditions. So it actually becomes a lot easier to go to the Kennedy Center or your favorite chosen venue because of the low ridership and the favorable traffic conditions. So we've done it the last couple of years. So I've seen it play out where things actually get better for a commuter to go from place to place because of the low ridership and because of the favorable traffic conditions. It actually gets much better around here to travel.
But there's no targeted survey for people with disabilities, right? Find that out.
I don't have an answer to that one. But just based on being an operation type person, meaning that I'm literally, you know, eyeball to eyeball with customers. And so I see how someone with challenges get around versus no challenges, and both get around much better doing this time of season because of the low ridership and the favorable traffic conditions.
Thank you. Next, Anu.
Chair Calabria, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Okay. On this slide here.
Sorry, Bobby. Steve Caffin just raised his hand. Steve, go ahead.
Actually, this is for Teresa. Are we finished this presentation? Because it relates to something else with Teresa. Bobby, are you finished?
Well, I was just going to kind of gloss over the slide that I see up.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll hang up for a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Well, on this one here, this is related to Express 3 that goes from Foggy Bottom to Farragut North. Option B was chosen because it provides the quickest access to get customers into the Red Line service. As it relates to Metro Center, option A was chosen because it was a more efficient routing between Metro Center and Federal Center. Next slide. Our main quality assurance plans is to ensure that the contract buses and the metro buses report everything in real time, meaning not a report at the end of the day, but actually address the issues real time to the responsible party. Next slide. These are the staging areas. These areas was chosen because they provided the best avenue to turn buses around for their return trip. Thank you, Anu.
You're most welcome.
Any final questions from members?
For Teresa.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Teresa. I have a question. Doesn't relate to this, but it may relate to your area.
Okay.
In about a year and a half, we're going to have a huge deluge of visitors who are coming to World Cup matches in Philadelphia or in Newark, New York. And doubtless they're going to be taking the train to, to Union Station. Let me finish. In using Union Station, I don't know if this is our responsibility or not, but the entrance, the metro entrance, I'm not talking about Amtrak, but the metro entrance into the Union Station platform doesn't look particularly inviting. And that station itself might be given priority for lighting too, just because it's going to be a showplace for many people. It's going to be the first impression of Washington, D.C. once they get off the train. So that's all I wanted to say. It may not even be your area, but.
well, let me just say this. When we plan outages, whether it is a weekend outage, an early out, which is where work begins during revenue time, but shortly before after revenue, which means like at 10 o'clock at night, or if it's an extended outage like this one here, we take into account from 5 years in advance and do site surveys on every line of our metro. Union Station is a part of being taken care of. I cannot speak to when, but I do know that it has already been put down on a list with a to be determined. I can agree with you there. My sister uses Union Station when I have to pick her up. I'm like, whew, this station needs a facelift a little bit. But yes, I'm fully aware of that station. We are looking to do our rehabilitation and our upgrades in sections so we do not inconvenience customers to a higher level. So with that being said, I will say in 2025, that is something I'll make sure I have on my list to keep in mind. And hopefully we can get it taken care of before World Cup.
Okay. That was a long answer. I didn't hear anything definitive. I'm saying that you might want to make this priority because so many people from out of town will get their first impression based upon that experience in the metro. And I see it's on your list, so that's great.
Next is Doris. Doris, do you have any additional comments?
Yes. My question is, could Therese mention the upgrading of the platform edge lights? And I'm curious about what kind of upgrades will be done, and will there be any changes in the type of lighting that's being used or its color? And it's an important question because the lighting used on the platform edge plus the actual surface of the platform edges are under a service facilitation, an equivalent facilitation requirement from the Department of Transportation, Department of Justice, because of the materials and methods that were used to construct detectable warnings at the platform edge. So the lighting, very important issue, and I hope the lighting will remain the same colors that you're using, which are more detectable to people with low vision.
It will. We are doing the same type of platform edge lighting upgrade as we did last year in the 2023 winter shutdown on the Red Line. So, for instance, Judiciary Square was one of those stations. They are utilizing the same materials, the same type of bulbs, everything. It is going to be a replica.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members, Anu?
Yeah, I don't believe we have any additional hands up at this point, Chair Calabia.
This is Barbara, Ombudsperson for People with Disabilities. I have a comment about Union Station, if I may.
Please.
Short, brown hair, female. I was reading over the weekend that there is going to be a major renovation project at Union Station. I'm referring to Union Station Amtrak, all of the retail, and that would, it's still in the works, the planning part about it, but maybe you noticed there's a lot of empty storefronts there. That's primarily due to the lack of customers as a result of during the COVID time period when people weren't really traveling. But that project will take approximately 13 years. Unfortunately, not time for your concern, Steve, but that is in the works.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, Anu, any other person online who might have?
Do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Okay. Well, thanks to Teresa and to Bobby. We appreciate it, and best wishes and good luck for your work during this crucial time that we've been talking about. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you for having us.
Sure. Steve is on track to talk at 4:45 and a little early. Let's turn to what Steve wants to talk about. And let me mention, while we're a couple minutes early, that I have to compliment Steve for the photographs and the idea of accompanying the photographs with the text to further help in the discussion. That's really exemplary. Only a few other members have done such. Sandy, who's here, Doris is occasionally also commented between meetings on email. And I will get out a notice to all members that this exemplary affirmative kind of help for discussions of items on the agenda or items to think about between meetings should be tried out by others too. In the past, we've only really heard from Steve, Sandy, and Doris between meetings, sometimes Debbie Fisher, but it's time that other members realize that being a member is not just for three meetings a month. Hopefully you consider some of the things that affect people with disabilities and seniors. Hopefully you think of those things between meetings and will share them between meetings, as Sandy, Steve, and Doris has done. I really compliment Steve today for he's going to discuss and his preparations for helping us understand what he's discussing. Steve, the show is yours.
My goodness, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. thank you. Thank you, Tina. Thank you. This came up because we have spent a lot of time talking about bus islands to the point that that I personally doubted we would be spending very much more time on it. I think we looked specifically at the bus islands on 14th Street and, you know, on the east side of the city. And we made comments. The comments were reflected in some updates. And the 14th Street islands seemed to be working very well. I raised this question because there is a new configuration of bus islands, several new ones throughout the city, and I'm sure it's planned. And I'm sure when our colleagues from DDOT take the floor, they'll be able to talk more fully about it than I can. But
are they on board at the moment?
They are.
Let me finish, Tito.
I want you to finish. I just wanted to ensure that Megan and her DC colleagues are benefit from the preparations you've made. Yes, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. The bus islands on Columbia Road, which is a through street that goes crosstown in the northwest, and it actually has three bus lines running on it. Two are really one bus line, express and local, 42 and 43, and another one, and some pretty heavy traffic. That street uses a different style of bus island than we have looked at on 14th Street. And in the piece that I sent out and was disseminated, you know, I used pictures and also some descriptions to talk about the specifics.
Steve,
but
ask Anu if there's any way that she can show the photos for the discussion. Is there any way your screen can sure. show?
Give me just a quick moment, and I'll pull that up.
Yeah.
I think that from our constituents' standpoint, since each of these bus islands is different, it's going to result in some confusion. For example, on Columbia Road, the kiosks are not with the island, but rather still on the sidewalk. So therefore requiring the bus operator to truly look right and to wait for people to cross. And they'll be crossing over the newly established bicycle lanes. It's also important that pedestrians and riders realize that there are bicycle lanes there now, because that's an old established community that walks pretty much by instinct. Many people do, and they need to understand that.
Whether she can put up the photographs, and we'll see what you're talking about.
Oh, great!
So, and I'm about to share. So if somebody can confirm, you can see my screen. I would appreciate that.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
Okay. Sir. So this. Let me describe this. It is on Columbia Road, a block from 18th Street, which is probably the main cross street. And you, from left to right, you have the street. You have the small island. You have the bicycle lane, which is identified in green and white stripes. And you have the sidewalk. Now, they're all the same level, unlike the one on 14th Street. In addition, you can see the confusion here because there's actually a gentleman who is I watched him because I saw this and I wanted to take this picture, and then I watched to see what he was doing, whether he was waiting for a bus or what have you. And in fact, he was waiting for a bus. And the kiosk for the bus is just to the right. Now, he probably didn't look down, and he probably knows this community from 20 or 30 years ago, you know, when there was no issue. But you can see the potential danger that is going to require in my opinion, some either a bump or some other identification to the bicyclists that they have to be cautious at this time, because nobody is stepping down and up. You're walking right across from the sidewalk to the bus island. In the second picture,
hey Steve, this is Pat. Could I ask a question?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, thanks. I'm just trying to understand that your description. So when you're saying the kiosk, what exactly is that?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you know, that's fine. Yeah.
Some of the bus stops have little bus shelters.
Right.
That's the better word than kiosk. It's they're bus shelters. And they generally have three seats.
Right.
And some of them have next bus information inside of them. And I don't know exactly how many. I would say maybe about half or less than half of the bus stops have these.
So my thinking, at least the terminology that I've heard, is that this is a shared platform. So you do have your kiosk. Now you have me saying kiosk. You have your shelter in its standard place, which you're looking for. However, the problem here is going to be that I don't know that this is a shared platform, because I don't know that the bus is going to be, what, about 10 feet away, because you're going to have, let's say, 8 feet for the bus, for the bikes, you know, the accessible bike lane. So you're going to need something in that shared platform area to indicate to someone who's blind like myself that this is a shared platform. I would want to take a step out to the sidewalk, and I'm going to see that this platform area with the bikes and all that, bike lanes and all that, are going quite a ways. I don't know that I have a shared platform there. You would know it because, of course, you can see. Right.
Yeah.
But I would need to have something like an APS or whatever that would describe that to me.
And Pat, you raise a critical point.
Mm-hmm.
The bus operator now needs to pull up to the island.
Right.
And
exactly.
And not just look to see if there are any potential riders standing on the island, but also look to the extreme right to see if there are any potential riders sitting in the bus shelters.
Right.
And if they are, it's going to be a good 30 to 60 seconds for those people to cross over, because people who sit in the bus shelters often tend to want or tend to need the seats that are available there.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I'm raising this because we haven't looked at these configurations of islands before, and I don't know whether DDOT designers, and we'll find out, have considered our constituencies in properly setting these up so they work for everybody.
Megan is here, and she's scheduled to come on with her team at 4:55, but please go on with your pictures. You still have three others to go.
Okay, I have on this particular picture will cover the other two. This is just one block from the first one we saw, and notice it's completely different. Let me explain. On the left, you have the bus shelter. Then, instead of walking straight, You step down into the bicycle area. You step back up again to get to the bus island. It's totally different, requiring either some kind of knowledge or visibility that many of our constituents don't have. This creates a particular challenge. The other thing I would point out is if there's someone sitting in the bus shelter, maybe because it's snowing or raining or for whatever reason, it is not a direct cross to walk from the kiosk to the bus island. Rather, that person has to walk to the street corner, then cross and go up a ramp into the bus island. So this is a totally different configuration than the one we just saw. And I'm raising it for two reasons. First, three reasons. First, a lot has been curtailed on this through street in order to secure bicycle lanes. And on these pictures, and I took these in the middle of the day, there are a lot of cars lined up. This is a block backup, and there are no bicycles. The second thing is I frequent the Starbucks right on that corner, and I know a lot of people in that area. Not one of them told me that the community had some kind of outreach or input. And I'm not saying it didn't occur, but many people did not seem to be consulted on this. And the third thing is a number of the small businesses have raised concern because the parking in front of these businesses has been taken away in order to add the bicycle lanes and to move the traffic towards the center. So, I wanted to raise this. I hope the DDO planners will consider our constituents as they further design these. Thank you.
Do you want to quickly touch on your third and fourth photo?
I think the first two show it all.
Okay. Megan, welcome.
Calabia. I would invite David Van Dusen to initiate the topic and introduce any members from their team.
Yeah.
I'm David.
David. Okay. I see two people on the screen. David, yeah. Who's the other person?
Yeah, this is Jamie Carrington.
Hi, Jamie Carrington. I think a year ago or so, gave a presentation about some of these issues. So I'm glad that I'm here to be able to respond to some of Mr. Caffin's comments there.
David, next to you sits your name again. You said it, but I didn't catch it.
Sure. My name is David Van Dusen.
Oh, so we have two Davids? Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, just one David, right. One Jamie.
Yeah, I will. Oh. It may be simpler. Yeah. Because could you actually mute your. Sorry about that. Yeah. Yeah, because we're both in the same room, but couldn't get it to work with the screen there.
Okay. Jamie and
hold on one second. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So so I'm Jamie Carrington, and I am a manager with the Bus Priority Program here at DDOT. I'm a middle-aged white man, glasses, sandy graying hair, looking forward to getting started. I will let David introduce himself, maybe through my mic.
Yeah, sure. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, so my name is David Van Dusen. I think I have to admit I'm getting close to middle age now too, but I have brown hair, I wear some glasses, and I'm a transportation planner here at DDOT with the Bus Priority Team.
Welcome.
Great, thank you. So, let's see, Anu, did you want to do the presentation on your end, or because I know that David had sent it, or should we just go? Actually, we added in response to some of what Steve had
Sure. So
said,
actually,
I actually we added a couple of slides just to make sure that we were covering.
Jamie, you can share.
Okay,
Yeah.
great. Thank
Yeah.
you. Hold on one second.
And while you're sharing, I just want to state that Steve Caffin's comments, along with the pictures, those were shared with the team. So they were made aware of that ahead of the meeting.
Oh, good, good.
Yes, thank you for that. Appreciate that because that does ensure that we're prepared to make the best use of everyone's time here. Okay, let me see if this is.
And
Hold on.
your screen.
What? Oh, it seems very small. What am Sorry, forgive me. I'm not used to Teams.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I'm going to start off with a few slides, and then David will take over there. So this opening slide says accessibility and bus priority, DDOT update. And there's a picture of a circulator bus, which we are sad to say goodbye to, but with a woman using a mobility power scooter boarding on a ramp from a curb extension that we built as part of one of our projects. And so, on a high level, accessibility and bus priority in DC, we want to maximize access to opportunity via transit. And we know that that people with disabilities are twice as likely to live in a zero car household. And we know that when buses are slow and unreliable, that it deprives everyone, particularly those folks who don't have a car, of access to basic needs and opportunities. So in addition to ensuring access via transit, we also recognize that accessibility to transit is just as critical. So we want to focus on safe sidewalks and crossings, minimizing conflicts among modes, and accessible, comfortable bus stops. And there's a picture in the inset showing one of our modular bus bulb curb extensions by Franklin Park, where buses are able to pull right up next to it. And there's actually kind of in the background, you can see a gentleman who is using a motorized scooter exiting the number 80 bus on that platform, which means that the buses don't have to worry about maneuvering to get over to the curb. So some of the frequent accessibility issues that we do see at bus stops around the region, because buses do need the full curb access to have a fully accessible boarding, the issues that undermine it, the biggest one is going to be illegal parking. And that's something we see time and time again, whether it's someone who is full on parking or whether it's a delivery person thinking that, oh, it's okay, I can just stop here. No matter what, it means that the bus can't properly pull over to the curb and you can run into some real difficulties. And there are a few pictures here. One of them is showing a bus stop where there's a gentleman with a mobility device who basically is, I'm not sure how he's going to get onto a bus, which is pulled over at an angle, not able to fully berth against the curb because there's a truck that's blocking it.
Excellent.
Another
Excellent.
picture that's in the bottom left is showing a bus that where people have to board from the roadway level because there was a van that was blocking the bus from pulling all the way over to the curb. And then lastly, a third picture on bottom right showing no fewer than three cars lined up parked in the bus stop. So you've got people who are walking on two legs around the cars, between the cars, and this would be a completely inaccessible situation for anyone who needed to use a mobility device.
Excellent.
So
Excellent.
what? So some of the things that we're doing to help address this, as I mentioned at the beginning, is doing curb extensions at bus stops. So bringing basically making it physically impossible for any car to come up, and I mean, a car could park in the middle of it, but that means that they're going to be blocking through traffic, which is usually more of a deterrent because folks who think that they can pull over and block a bus stop will probably end up responding if someone is honking at them because they're blocking traffic. So this means that not only is it more accessible for people who need it, it also means that it's a quicker stop process because the bus doesn't have to maneuver all the way over to the curb. It doesn't have to deal with some of these really time-consuming boardings when it's not able to be flush with the curb. And then at the end, it is much faster when it is leaving the stop because it can just go. It doesn't have to be waiting for drivers to let the bus merge back into traffic. Some of the other things we can do for bus stops is move them from the near side of the intersection to the far side because that gives them more space to maneuver so they can get all the way to the curb. We want to have longer bus zones so that they can have more room to maneuver, less risk of things being blocked. We outline bus zones, try to make them more visible. And finally, enforcement using not only our traffic control officers, but also the Clear Lanes camera enforcement program that WMATA has been a great partner with us on. And we are already finding that it's having a difference in terms of nudging people out of that behavior where they can think, oh, I just have to pull over for a few minutes. I can block the bus stop. That's no problem. Now they're starting to realize that it is a problem. It's a major accessibility problem. And so to touch on some of those design questions that Steve had mentioned before, these were slides from a previous presentation, but it is does cover some of the nuances of these design decisions that we have. And I think I'll preface all of it by pointing out that we are in this industry are desperate for national guidance in this regard. That unfortunately, this was an area where when ProAg was developed, ProAg just did not get into it because, to be honest, these types of treatments didn't really exist in the United States. They existed in Europe in countries that had a stronger tradition of providing low stress bike facilities, but they hadn't really been adopted fully in the United States. And so unfortunately, that meant that when ProAg was getting fully adopted, it didn't give us all the tools that we would like to have some really clear templates on how to design these situations. However, we knew that as we were trying to make biking as safe and low stress as possible for people of all ages and abilities, we knew that the critical thing there was to ensure that we had physical separation, protection wherever possible. So on this slide,
Jamie, could you give us the term that you mentioned, pro-wag? Is that a one word?
ProAg, the Public Right-of-Way Accessibility Guidelines produced by the Access Board, and which finally, after I think it was 15 years of foot dragging by the feds, was finally adopted as formal regulation, and which was a great step forward for that. But unfortunately, because the actual content of those guidelines was frankly pretty old by the time it was made official, it does mean that there are these gaps that we're doing our best to work through.
Thank you, JB.
So on this slide, where it says designing for safety and accessibility of bus stops, says type A and island stop. And so this is what Steve was talking about with bus stop islands. This would be a situation where the bus stop platform. The boarding happens on a concrete island that is completely separated from the sidewalk itself and where the bike lane runs in between. Or it doesn't have to be a bike lane. It could be a motor vehicle lane. But most often where we've been deploying them, it's a bike lane that's there. So this we use when we have a wide right of way that allows for that full separation, because according to ProWag, we are required to have at least 8 feet of full clear space on the island to ensure that there's enough room for deployment of the ramp, for maneuvering of people using the stop, particularly if they have a mobility device. And then we have a lot of other safety features in here where we have use physical and visual cues to signal to people using bikes that they're approaching a place that has some conflict coming up and they need to be prepared to stop for anyone who might be crossing there. We also have detectable warning surfaces prior to all crossings, which is something that's dictated by ProWag. So that's something where we fortunately have guidance that we can rely upon. We have audible pedestrian signals where possible if there is a signal that's co-located there. I know that that's a situation where we've heard that there's a desire to have more of the audible beacons on the sidewalk side to alert people before they might have to cross the bicycle lane. And that's an element that we're looking into. It definitely is something that would be very expensive to take on at this point. But we are looking and whenever we have a location that we're putting in a new stop, we try to see if that's something that's feasible.
Great.
I'm switching to the next slide. This says type B, a shared stop. And so a couple of those locations, or definitely the first location in the pictures that Steve had showed, was what we would call a shared stop. And thank you, Mr. Sheehan, for you pointed that out. So this is something that we use when there's not space to have a fully separated island. And in this case, the boarding platform is sticking out from the sidewalk and so is accomplishing a lot of what I, at the beginning of my presentation, when I mentioned how we do curb extensions, bus bulbs at a lot of locations with a lot of locations that don't have bike lanes. And by extending that, it does provide a more level boarding, not totally level, but it provides a more reliably accessible boarding surface from which people can board the bus, alight from the bus. But then the challenge is, because the bike lane is going through there, we really throw as much as we possibly can at trying to communicate to people riding a bike through here that you're entering a space where there's people are going to be walking around. You need to expect that people are walking in front of you. You need to slow down, and people that are crossing in front of you are the ones with the right of way. And so we have a whole combination of design features. We have the green paint that highlights the conflict. We have little rumble strips that we create out of thermoplastic so that
Right.
someone on a bike approaching a platform is getting that rumble to tell them, hey, you're approaching something. And when the bike lane ramps up to sidewalk level, that also says, it's like you're now entering a space that is a pedestrian first space. It's not just a continuation of the bike lane. We also have, and then for people who are crossing the bike lane there, we have detectable warning services at all the places where people would be crossing. We ensure that everything has enough space for the ramp to deploy from the bus if needed. One feature that we have been focusing on increasingly is ensuring that even in these constrained situations, that we have at least 2-3 feet of sometimes more of a step out zone to address the situation where people who are getting off of a bus may not realize that they're stepping into a space where someone might be coming by on a bike. And that's something where we also have asked WMATA to start looking into the possibility of having onboard audio announcements so that people would know before they get off the bus that they're at a location where they may need to be a little bit mindful. But fortunately, so far, we have not had any actual crash incidents. And I recognize that these are situations that are new, that it's a different configuration than folks are used to. But we have been putting a lot of time into monitoring how they're working and doing our best to mitigate it as we create more designs. And again, at the end of the day, the best thing that we can possibly get is strong design guidance on a national level, which is just not something that we have right now. There are other places that, like in the province of British Columbia in Canada, they recently produced a really great design and engineering guide for accessible bus stops that really dives into a lot of these considerations. But we don't quite have that level of kind of technical detail for the guidance that we have right now. Although just across the border in Montgomery County, they just produced on Friday, they've released a great guide to accessible streetscapes. Let's see.
You want to take a couple questions first?
Oh, sure. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm on full screen here, so I am not seeing the questions come in.
No problem, Jamie.
This is Tino, the chair. This is wonderful. Some of the things that you've been doing now, for example, the rumble strips, the bicycle kind of rumble strips, are something that Steve Kaufman and I have both advocated starting several years back. I'm glad to see that they're being adopted. I also want to ask if the guidance that you mentioned Canada has, what city was that in Canada that you
Well,
said?
it was the province of British Columbia that they have produced a really great guide to accessibility and bus stops that does specifically get into figuring out,
Sure.
'cause in certainly in Vancouver, a very big biking city. So this is something that they've done a lot with of figuring out how do we make sure that things are safe and accessible for everybody on the street.
Okay, whether it's Vancouver or British Columbia, if you have whatever they issue that's available in online form, maybe you could
Yes.
with us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Matt Johnson of Montgomery County has often visited us, and I guess we'll contact him about, you said something was released on Friday.
Yeah, it was a guide that they have been working on for a while and that is based on a lot of great research, and I know a lot of input from the folks on this committee and others in Montgomery County. And so yeah, it's hot off the presses.
So we'll ask him for an online version too. But
Great.
I'm very impressed by what you've just shown us. There's obviously always more to do, but I now turn over to other members who may have questions.
Chair,
Anu?
this is
Yes.
Anu. We have Pat Sheehan, followed by Doris Ray, and then Steve Kaffin. So, Patrick, go ahead.
Thanks, Anu. A good presentation. Glad to see that you're communicating, particularly with Montgomery County. Been working with Matt Johnson for about 5 years on this.
Right.
Here, I also know that ProAg still needs to have DOJ signing off on it and Department of Transportation, I think it's FTA, sign off
Right.
on it before it becomes actual law. A couple of other things. Both Matt Johnson and Susan Crawford are working with the Transportation Research Board to investigate what's going on with respect to the bus islands on a national level and make mm-hmm. recommendations. So they have a contract in place there. And I think some of the national type results that you're looking for may come through that committee of the Transportation Research Board. So that is work that's ongoing. I'm pleased to see any of the accessible pedestrian signals installed, particularly for a shared platform or the shared platform that you have versus the bus island approach, because as someone who is visually impaired sitting at the within the bus shelter, I need to understand what's in front of me. And so being able to utilize the accessible pedestrian signal, hold it in so it describes that in front of me I have the shared platform, is critical. Quoting, I guess, and Doris I know can correct me, the ADA, you've got effective communication standards that you need to meet. So that has to be described. Basically, what you see is what I need to hear from the APS, and also maintenance of services, maintenance of service platforms, I think is another portion of the ADA that is out there that this needs to meet. And so those two standards are critical. The APS for me is going to be good because I need to know what's in front of me as the mm-hmm. buses come up. And then I guess I'll just go one more to what Steve said. And Steve, it was a very good question. Do we have any data that explains why we're putting these bus lanes in? Are there enough bicycle riders that it mandates that we put these in, particularly in mid-block crossings? I've heard anecdotally, and I think this is something that the Transportation Research Board report will look at, is that people say that there are a lot of bicycle riders, but I haven't seen any data that indicates that that is the case.
Patrick, I should mention that this past week, the Washington Post dedicated two pages, one page, three quarters of a page probably, of a number of letters which from people who have problems with bicycles and bicycle riders and how they go about it. And the second day was a two-thirds page of letters of proponents for bike. As someone who has often been frightened by a bike that just swooped by me on a sidewalk, I tend to sympathize with the people who raise questions about all that the mm-hmm. bicycle riders have gained so far at the expense of people with disabilities and others. That's just a mention.
Right. And so what I'm looking at, and I think you're on the same page with me, Tino, is are the decisions to put these bus islands, are they data-driven? Or is it because the riding community is advocating for them all over the place? I don't know that they're data-driven.
Well, I would say that in this circumstance, they're absolutely data-driven. So this project was something where we knew that Columbia Road had been identified in planning documents as a bus priority corridor due to high ridership and slow buses, extremely, extremely slow buses. We also knew that it was a bike priority corridor. And what's more, it was one of the highest bike injury corridors in the city. So we knew that at that time, there used to, if you remember how it used to be set up, there were just paint only bike lanes that were between parked cars and the vehicle lanes. And the problem is that, as you can see, most places where you have those is that cars will inevitably end up blocking that, which causes some serious safety issues. If you have somebody who feels like they then have to, if they're riding a bike, go off to the left to try to pass around someone who's, backing into them, trying to get into a parking space or something. But more than that, it's not about the existing situation. It's because we recognize in as we plan bike facilities that we're not planning for the people who are wearing Lycra and who are existing, cyclists with a capital C. That's not who we're planning for. We're focused on ensuring that biking is a safe, comfortable, and reasonable way for people to get around because we know that so many trips that people are taking around, whether it's the city or the suburbs, are less than 3 miles, which is the kind of thing that is really easy to be able to switch people over to bikes, but only if it's safe and it's comfortable. There was a whole survey done a number of years ago trying to identify like what are the categories of people who the way that they think about riding a bike. And maybe 7%, I'm probably a little bit off on these numbers, but maybe 7% are the fearless. They'll ride a bike anywhere, even if there's no bike lane, they'll be speeding through. And then there's maybe 30% of people who just say, no way, no how, I'm never going to ride a bike. I have no interest in it at all. But the great majority of people, something I think over 50%, are identified as interested but concerned. That these are people who would absolutely consider riding a bike for a trip instead of driving, but they don't feel safe. And so it's really incumbent on us as the people who own and manage the streets to ensure that people have the ability to make that choice if they want to. If they want, we're not forcing anybody, but we definitely don't want a situation where people feel like they can't ride a bike somewhere and they have to drive somewhere purely because they don't feel safe. And that does include, I recognize that there's a broad spectrum of people with disabilities, but it does include people who are unable to drive for various reasons. Now, there's someone who's a very well-known engineer and planner in the transportation space who is legally blind, and so for him, bikes have always been his accessible way of getting around. We know that in the Netherlands, where they've been investing in these types of things for decades, that the highest rates of people riding bikes to get around, it's not young men, it is men and women between the ages of 50 and 65. That it's something that they really design their facilities to try to be as accessible as possible. So that's kind of the large, kind of the high level framing of kind of our approach here. But on Columbia Road itself, we really went location by location to think about what the best treatment would be for the stops. And like the one where you show the gentleman who seemed confused, that's a stop where, that has been constantly blocked by trucks for the adjacent liquor store just without fail. And so that's been a major trouble spot for a long time. So we knew that we had to accomplish something that meant that there was going to be an accessible place to board where the curb was right next to the bus and wouldn't be blocked. We knew we had to somehow incorporate a protected bike lane. We knew we had to do that throughout the corridor rather than having gaps where suddenly the protected bike lane would disappear and a truck would be blocking it again. So we had a, in trying to juggle a lot of those different concerns, this was the design that we came up with. I'm definitely not claiming that it's perfect, but and we actually are, if there are any specific suggestions that folks might have about better ways to indicate to bus passengers that in those shared stop situations, the safest place is to wait kind of on the sidewalk. We have been putting up signs saying, pedestrians wait on sidewalk, but we realize that that may not be clear to everybody. And Pat, what you mentioned about the audio, I actually just realized that now that WMATA is really expanding the range of their signs, their passenger information signs with the like solar powered technology, and all of those have audio readouts. That's actually someplace where those already exist. We can work, see if we can work with WMATA to get the message about the geometry embedded in that information point. Because if we know that that's already a point that someone might be going to look for information, that seems that would be the logical place for it, rather than trying to create a separate APS that would be kind of a standalone thing, but might be a little bit unclear, particularly if it was a spot where it's not actually a crosswalk across the entire street. So we wouldn't want to give, you know, unclear guide. We wouldn't want someone to think that they're about to cross an entire street
Right, exactly.
and then they'd only get to the platform and have a difficulty there. So
And just add,
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I'm definitely going to follow up on that.
yeah, you may want to also look at Polara, just because they also now have a installation that is based on solar power, so you don't have to do a lot of cabling to connect an APS to a given other apparatus drilling down through the sidewalk. So that's another option. I'd love to see data that you've got to support the installation of the buses and the, I mean, of the float of the bus islands, and how those decisions were made. I mean, it's very valid for you to come back and say all this stuff. I think it's good, because I've never heard these kinds of studies being done before. So it gives a more balanced picture that you're not just waking up one morning and putting these things in without a study. So I'd love to see that, because the arguments are there for both sides, and that's good. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share some of
Great. Thank you.
I know anyone with their hand up beside me?
It's Doris and then Steve and then yourself. So, and
Okay.
just as a reminder, we are at 5:32. So Doris, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for your presentation, and I echo everything that Patrick just said. I do want to magnify on that since we're in a tri-state area, there are differences, and as long as we don't have the necessary standards, not just, you know, minimum guidance, but the necessary standards in law, to ensure some of the things that some of the accessibility features that the disability community needs in the construction of complete streets, including bicycle lanes and bus islands, and reconfiguring what we have to do as dedicated bus riders to rely on bus service to get
Your question,
everywhere.
your question.
So, but what I want to say is that in our state, for example, the
Virginia.
way the standard is written, localities and the state can choose between spoken word and audible sig and spoken word and pulse signals. And it's become very difficult. For example, in Arlington, they prefer to use and have started using, despite input from the disability community and their commission, pulse signals as their main type of signal crossing. And I think it would be very, very helpful. Number one, I'd like to know if you're using spoken word or whether you're using pulse, and secondly, or both. And secondly, whether I think for the passenger going to and trying to get on a bus on a bus island, not just the ones departing from the bus, that we need to have that spoken word information about what we're going to encounter. And the idea of maximizing annunciator signals, which I think is what you were referring to, on the bus, as a person with who's deafblind, who has a significant hearing impairment, I could not hear that standing on the curb and having to scurry to get to a bus. So I think there needs to be some redundancy to explain all of that, and I think there also needs to be some way for us to stop the cycle traffic from coming towards us, because, you know, we're taught if we know that that's coming towards us, we're going to hesitate to cross.
Jamie, quick response.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that what you mentioned for the certainly for onboard announcements that we would have to defer to WMATA on. I believe that I mean our in the district our APS are oral spoken word. But yeah, I'd have to confirm on that.
Okay, Steve.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My goodness. You know, perhaps Jamie, through Anu, you could send us this survey that says over 50% of the people are amenable to taking buses, to taking bicycles. I'd really like to see that. And perhaps you could send that to Anu. All right. Just for that reason. By the way, I'm a member of Capital Bike Share, and I ride these bicycles. And I'm also sensitive to the needs of other people in this community. And I don't know whether DDOT under the current administration has been requested to make bike lanes and bike transport the priority. But I will tell you, on Columbia Road, traffic, including the buses, is backed up between a block and a block and a half because they do a squeeze that they never had to do before. When the federal government opens, a lot of people take those buses from the Northwest. They are the key buses from Connecticut Avenue and from 14th Street. They're not if they're nicely dressed, chances are they're going to be trying to sit on a bus. It'll take a much longer time to commute. I see a lot of cities, bus islands, a lot. I've never seen a configuration like this, and I've never seen something where everything is second priority to the bus lane. The last thing I have to say is your photos were excellent. Thank you very much. They were truly excellent, except it's not the situation on Columbia Road. What you showed was two very wide streets with two lanes of traffic going each way, a very nicely configured bicycle lanes. You showed what 16th Street looks like. You really have to be careful, because not over 50% of the people in this city want to take bikes. And so that's... That's all I have to say.
Jamie?
Thank you very much. But please send that survey. It may change my mind.
Jamie?
I'd like to see over 50% willing to take a bike instead of a bus or instead of driving.
Sure. I mean, it's a longstanding... it was a really groundbreaking research, because for a very long time, bike planning and engineering had focused only on the people who were kind of the loudest and very kind of recreation focused and wasn't focusing on the people who actually would be making use of it. But yeah, I can certainly send that along. Yeah, and I mean, I will just say that on Columbia Road, I mean, there was not a reduction in vehicle lanes. So to the extent that there are cars that might be stopping and blocking cars from getting through, and the thing is that those cars were, if they were able to stop and not block traffic, it's because they were stopped in the bike lane before. So I think that it's something where the traffic capacity is the same, but where if people are doing things that are illegal, it means that instead of creating a real safety issue for someone on a bike, it does mean that there may be more of a traffic issue. But it's something we really are just wrapping up construction right now, and it does take a little bit of time for things to kind of even out.
The last thing I have to say, and this is important, would you please involve the community in substantial outreach, which I've been told by speaking with probably 20 to 25 people did not occur in the community that is now dealing with this. So it is not bicycles in a vacuum. These are communities that have to deal with this. Thank you.
I've just put our website into the chat. There was extensive outreach done for this project, and you know it's always hard to reach everybody, but it was something that went through significant vetting over the course of 2 years. And there's actually more details about that on the Columbia Road part of the website. Yeah, I do just
Jamie.
want to note that we are not quite finished. There were a few slides, which I know, David, I realize we're over, but just a few more slides that I was going to hand over to David to finish off, if that's
I
okay.
was actually going to ask Anu if we should maybe come back another time to do the rest of those. Just because
Yeah, I think we have to ask you to do that. We invite you that. We ask you to do that. But in the meanwhile, Jamie, two questions. Isn't DC now beginning to enforce the regulations against trucks and bikes and trucks and cars from parking in the bike lanes or
In
in any kind of lane that buses need to use to have
oh in yeah
passengers?
in bus lanes, yes. I mean all of those are things that have always been against the law, but we do have, so clear lanes is the camera-based enforcement that we have with WMATA, so that any car that is illegally parked in a bus stop or parked or driving in a bus lane, that as long as they have a visible license plate, which is unfortunately not as universal as it used to be, but that will result in a citation.
Yeah, are you a bike rider?
Sorry?
Are you a bike rider?
Oh, yes, I do. That's my main mode of transportation when I'm not riding the bus or the train.
Okay. Well, we do hope that you and your colleague may come back, maybe even Megan. Megan has graced our screens for several years, and please do extend our thanks to her for having done that. And if she was involved in having you come, we appreciate that. We look forward to continued discussion of this. Some of us have wondered whether the bicyclists community has outmaneuvered other people in some of these decisions to have bike lanes and such. In any event, thank you again, and we appreciate what you are doing and what Megan has been doing for years. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, let's see our
Chairman
final.
Abia,
Yes.
before you move on to the next topic of PG County bus service,
Yes.
we are at 5:44. So, if you think appropriate, we can go to public comments and see if there are any members of the public who would like to make any comments.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, so if there are any members of the members of the public who are interested in making comments, please let us know now so that we can take your comments before we conclude our meeting for the day. You can unmute yourself if you're on phone by pressing star six. If you would like to make raise your hands on the phone, you can press star nine. If you are on video conference, you can click on the audio button to unmute yourself and click on the raise hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. Also, if any members of the public would send their comments before or after the meeting, you can email us at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100 and we will follow up with you. So Chair Karabi, I'm not seeing any hands up by any of the members of the public, so perhaps we do not have any public comments for this meeting.
Yes, and we need to talk about Prince George's, but just the point of inquiry, since Rico Dancy is not with us, probably no sign interpreters are with us either, right?
Not for this meeting, no.
Okay. Does that allow us to go over? In the past, we, by contract with the sign interpreters, we've had to shut down at 6. Mm-hmm. But there are no sign interpreters. Can we run over a few minutes?
If it's only a few minutes, sure. But do keep in mind that there are a number of staff on this meeting with us. So just to be mindful.
Yes, well, they can leave whenever. But in any event, let's move on to the last thing on the agenda, which is Prince George's.
Barbara Millville, I have a comment, please.
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to make people aware, the Metro fans, that there is a pop-up shop selling Metro branded t-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, things for the holidays at the MLK Library, and it's on the first floor. And oh, there's also a online shop. So if anybody needs help, would like to know what's for sale, I will assist if you would like to email a new, and we could work that way.
Yeah, Barbara, how long will the pop-up shop be at the library?
December 21st.
Thank you.
Until when?
December 21st.
Oh, it ends then?
Yes.
Oh.
And I believe it's open until about 6 p.m. So check the website. If you look at wmata.com, that's the Metro website, of course. Right now, they have a banner, a red banner on the top of the home page. And if you click on there, that will take you directly to the store, and the online store, and it has the details of, pictured items and prices for that. And then it also has the details about the MLK Library, which is 901 G Street, I believe. Yes. Northwest. The closest metro is the gallery place.
Yes. Thank you, Barbara, for that. The online catalog for the things on sale is excellent. I've used it in the past. Are there any other public comments?
So, Chair Calabia, if you would like, you can move on to your discussion for a few minutes.
Yes. Sandy, are you still with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Sandy, your thoughts at this point? We're all anxious to help rectify problems in PG County. So You're on.
Okay, so a quick update. There's not much new since the AAC meeting when I mentioned this very briefly, but I'll go over it again. Thursday, November 21st at the WMATA board meeting, and Pat Sheehan was there speaking with the board. He's getting full buy-in from Don Drummer. When Don Drummer and Victor Weisberg spoke with us at the last BRS meeting earlier in November, one thing and another, we have been asked to please put our concerns forward to the board through Don Drummer and to PG County through Don Drummer's designee. And the best we can figure out, this would be Victor Weisberg. So the letter that the task group has put together, and there's about eight of us who all had a chance to give input to the letter to outline our concerns, has gone to Don Drummer right after the board meeting, November 21st. And then last Friday, the letter went out to Victor Weisberg. So we talk about, you know, our concerns in the bigger picture. You know, bus service helps all people, you know, reducing traffic congestion, getting people where they want to go, whether it's shopping, work, school, medical appointments, and I've probably left something out, but, you know, everyday stuff. We want to know what funding PG County is getting for bus or for public transportation and how much of that goes to public buses. We want to know how PG County is determining where to have bus routes. And they have done a bus planning in the past. And Victor Weisberg told us that they're doing another. They're about to roll out their update of that in early 2025. And he promised that we would have a chance to look at that as it comes out. He did use the word draft version in early 2025. What else? You know, what are they doing to improve the infrastructure on their bus routes, sidewalks to get to bus stops, lighting at bus stops, and there's probably something else. There was a fourth point, but regardless, Victor Weisberg has been invited to come back to our January meeting. So okay. Hopefully he will. And yes. I think we've done everything we can right now. But I am open to input from anybody, whether you're on the bus task group or another member of the AAC. I've been designated the point of contact. It was suggested that Denise Rush could be because she is so concerned about it, but she's having to take a little bit of a break right now. So Denise said, Sandy, go for it. You can handle it. And I've heard no objections. Nobody's wanted to take my job yet. So feel free to send me any suggestions you have. Okay. I remain open to conversation. I'm really bad at picking up phone messages. Email is a better way to get a hold of me. Anybody else on the task group who wants to say something? I think the meeting, we still have a couple of minutes here.
I think there's an understanding that in terms of the Better Bus Network redesign, which is virtually complete, it's amenable to new recommendations regarding PG County. Am I right?
I don't think so. At least I haven't seen anything from the DMV Moves people. This is Pat. I think what we're going to see is the bus resources for 26 and maybe 27 might be what we have now.
If there's agreement both with us and with Prince George's that there's, say, a bus desert or more, and we identify it and there's agreement on the part of PG County and us, it can't be changed until 2026?
Well, I'm not seeing any funding. That's the question we have to ask. Is there increased funding, but they're calling it for 2026, the funding is neutral? So, and Tino, I'm agreeing with you and Steve and everybody else. I want to see more buses. I want to see the better bus network be a priority in Prince George's County. We want to deconflict the buses that are already there that are running on parallel routes and see what we can do to extend it. But right now, the key question is, are they including increased funding in Prince George's County? I don't think so.
And
the other thing I would just say with respect to what Sandy's offering is, particularly if you and Steve can read the transit vision plan, would be great, because there's a lot of color-coded things in there that I can't read, data tables that I'm not experienced in, that I can't read because the PDF document isn't accessible. So I need some help from you visual people to help, so that when we go into the meeting with them, we can talk about the, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 points that we have, and maybe we can email through, through next month and come up with 7 or 8 questions, things that we want to have answers to, maybe even get them out to Victor so that he can come to the meeting with answers, as opposed to, let me look into that.
Sure.
So let me jump back in. This is Sandy. Yes, I absolutely agree that people who can see better than I can, I have a very difficult time reading maps. The colors on maps aren't distinguishable, and thin lines for bus routes are often hard for me to see. So I can't even see where the better bus design plans for WMATA buses go. And like Pat said, you know, there is both on the PG County side and the Metro side, there is acknowledgement that there are routes that have duplicative service, but I can't see those on bus route maps. So if we can understand, you know, there's a lot of that, there's a little bit of that, and what is their new plan? And WMATA says they want to work with PG County to deconflict these routes so that more of the PG County buses could serve areas that are not already being served. And both PG County and WMATA are talking about level funding. So don't get your hopes up about, you know, exorbitantly more bus route possibilities. But even with level funding, they can be used more wisely, I think.
Do we know who on staff of WMATA has been dealing with PG County? And if we do know, can we have them involved with us? Meeting or before a meeting?
I know that Alice, help me, I knew Alice's last name, Allison. Is it Jackson? I'm
Davis.
Sorry.
Davis. Hmm.
Davis. Mm-hmm. And she actually, I think, presented to this committee. They've been on break. So they're aware of these discussions going on. So all the better bus discussions that we've had, she's been part of those. They're meeting with Prince George's County directly and going forward. So I think it would be good to hear from the Prince George's County people to see, you know, what is in their upcoming plan. Love to know what the difference is between the 2018 plan and the 2025 plan.
Absolutely. I've always
yeah.
thought, you know, I agree with you. I've always thought that the starting point is in their 2025 plan.
It's the 2018 plan. Yeah.
Well, I think we all looked at the 2018 plan, and after a while we realized it was 2018, and we really couldn't extrapolate at this point in time because of changed population centers,
mm-hmm.
different
right.
needs. But I think our starting point, as Sandy said, needs to be that 2025 plan to see, well, what kind of needs study did they do to create this plan? Did they do the same kind of interview process that Better Bus did, for example?
I think they did.
Or another question might be, Steve, and this is a harder question, is you had this plan in 2018, it's now 2024.
if you didn't make it a priority in 2018, why are we thinking that it's going to be a priority in 2025? If nothing got done?
Good question.
You know, I mean, that's a hard question, Steve. I agree. But that's why having you guys who are visual go through the plan on 2018 and say, wait a minute, you said the same thing back in 2018. So I think it's a question of, are they going to make it a priority? Is DMV Moves going to make it a priority? Because I could certainly use some of this to go back to DMV Moves and say the same thing, which we are, but we'll see. Yeah.
Okay.
Team sport here, Prince George's County. Yeah. Certainly can use your help.
Yes. So in terms of January, are we anticipating that Victor Weisberg, it might be time for him, or is that premature?
No, I think, I'd like to ask him some questions.
Okay, yeah. So try and get him on the agenda for January.
Right? Sandy, is that what the invite was that went out?
Yes, so the invite was, but Anu may know more than me.
Okay, so the invitation has been sent out. I have not received any response yet.
Good.
It could be because of Thanksgiving holidays. People take time off. So perhaps this you might hear back.
It's only been 2 business days since it went out.
Okay. All right. Well, we're all on board on what can be done or what should be done. And it's unclear if there'll be money for it to be done, but at least we'll be on record of trying to get straight what has not been done and what should be done. Any other comments? We're 1 minute over the meeting, but we also don't need to end right now because there are no interpreters on contract for beyond 6 o'clock. Anything?
This is Anu, and I just want to remind the committee that, as discussed in the past, this is a topic that's going to be on the agendas going forward as well.
Okay. Well, now, is there anything else that anyone wants to bring up? If
Anu,
not,
you have an announcement, right, Anu?
Sure. So just to remind any members of the public, if you would like to send your public comments, you can email us at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. That concludes my announcement. Thank you.
Okay, with that conclusion, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
So moved.
Second?
I do.
Hearing no objections, this meeting is adjourned. And thank you very much for the discussion today. And especially thanks to Steve for his pictures and his explanation to the DC.dot people about some of the problems he's observed. Thank you again. And
thanks, Tino.
Next time.
Pat.
And I
right. Yeah.
And you asking the kind of question that I really couldn't ask, and that is, who's setting priorities with respect to bicycle lanes versus right. the rest of us, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
It seems like it's accentuated in the past 2 or 3 years.
Oh, I think we're asking the right questions. We'll see where it goes. Yeah, I agree.
If I can find the an online version of all the letters that appeared the first day regarding people who have questions about the validity of bicycles taking over the road. And then the second day of the bicyclists themselves.
Yeah, that'd be great, Tino.
I'll try and send it out
Good.
To you.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Good.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
I just want to remind everyone that we have our Metro Access Subcommittee meeting next week on Monday. That would be December 16th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And that's our last meeting for the calendar year 2024.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, everyone, and have a great evening. And
see you next week.
Thanks.
Thanks. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Good meeting. Thanks, Tina.